This podcast was recorded Thursday, October 8th at 11:22 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear it.
All right, let's just say it. Things will have changed by the time you hear this.
They certainly did last week.
God, it is hard to keep up.
Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those shrewd Snollygosters who look for your vote in the weeks before Election Day. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up later in the podcast, our Snollygoster of the Week award follows a lot of buzz from the presidential debate.
But first, apparently Ohioans are very ready to vote.
So I wanted to get out here today because this vote is very important, and I didn't want to wait until the last minute, and I wanted to get my vote in early.
There's some changes that got to be made, and we're going to do that through due process. That's how we're going to do it, without any problem.
I got young black sons, and you know, if they see me doing it, as they get older, like she said, like their one vote might make a difference.
That's Cheryl Turner, James Turner, and Tamar Scott, just three of the hundreds of voters who were lined up before dawn, ready to cast ballots at the early voting center in Columbus. Early voting centers around the state saw similar scenes, tens of thousands of voters flocking to cast their ballots the first moment they could.
Yeah, as for mail-in ballots, the state has already received 2.1 million applications. That is double the number of applications the state received 4 years ago. Now, an overwhelming majority of these early votes and the absentee vote applications are from Democrats. Polls show that 67% of Democrats plan to vote by mail, while 61% of Republicans plan to vote in person. I guess it wasn't surprising. We saw when Virginia opened up its early voting, we saw long lines. Like, keep in mind, the lines look longer because of social distancing.
Right.
Then normally they'd be snaking around closer together inside the Board of Elections. But still, there was way more people voting early in Columbus, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Youngstown, Trumbull County, mm-hmm. than there were in 2016.
Yeah, here in Franklin County in 2016, there were 2,400 people total who voted early in person on the first day they could. They were approaching that number by 2 p.m. on the first day. So they broke the 2016 mark by some measure. I think this really just amplified previous tendencies that already existed. Democrats tend to vote early. They tend to vote absentee. Republicans traditionally are more fond of voting in person on Election Day for several reasons. And the pandemic has really amplified that.
Yeah, the two things driving people out to vote: enthusiasm. The core Democratic supporters are very enthusiastic to get out and vote to defeat Donald Trump, let's face it. And they're worried about the coronavirus. And perhaps the early in-person voting shows some doubts about the mail-in voting process and their worries about that, whether their ballot gets in on time, whether it's counted properly. So they decided to vote in person, but do it early.
Yeah, when you look at, like, our friend Daryl Rowland at the Dispatch did some reporting, and of the 4,000 or so people who voted early in Franklin County on the first day, only 300 and some were Republicans. That was more than I expected. That was pretty surprising. But again, Republicans tend to be the ones who have concerns about early voting being fraudulent. There's no evidence really of that. There's no evidence that mail-in voting or in-person early voting has any security concerns whatsoever. It's on the same security level as traditional day of election voting. But Republicans still tend to be more skeptical of this. So it makes sense that Democrats turned out in droves. And also the midterm or the first election of a sitting president tends to be a referendum on his record.
Yeah.
And Democrats are very enthusiastic to try to unseat President Trump right now. So this is not surprising that it's happening. On the level it's happening was somewhat surprising.
It's a snapshot. But if I saw those pictures and saw those numbers on the first day of voting on October 6th, and I'm a Republican, I'd be a little nervous. It just shows you that, unlike in 2016, where Democrats perhaps weren't that enthusiastic about Hillary Clinton, that enthusiasm is back. Whether it's the same as it was for Barack Obama, we don't know. Whether the Republican enthusiasm for Donald Trump will show up as dramatically on Election Day, we still don't know. But that was a worrying sign for Republicans that first day and a hopeful sign for Democrats.
Again, this all needs to be taken with a grain of salt because this is just, again, this happens all the time where Democrats outturn, is that a word, outturn? If they outvote them in early in-person voting. I agree with you that there should be some concern. But again, the Democratic Party is very motivated right now to unseat a sitting president.
Yeah, and Trump supporters are also motivated. It's the folks in the middle that will decide it, and the turnout will decide it as well.
Yeah, we do have some new polling from the New York Times. Joe Biden leads President Trump by 1 point, so it's essentially tied, 45% to 44%. Some really unsurprising results here. Biden holds an 11-point lead over Trump when it comes to women. In 2016, Trump lost the Ohio women's vote by 3 points. And
That's significant there.
Yeah.
And that's where I think that...
Where was the polling going into it, I wonder? Obviously we can look at the results that happened.
Yeah, this is a snapshot. And 4 years ago, Hillary Clinton had comparable leads to what Joe Biden has now. And a lot happened between now and the election day 4 years ago. But it just it reinforces the point that Trump is not doing well among women, not doing as well as he has in the past. And Biden holds a 22% lead over Trump in the suburbs.
That's big because the suburbs have become sort of the cliche battleground of this election.
Yeah. Now, if you look at the other parts of the state, the rural parts, Northwest Ohio, Southeast Ohio, Trump has huge leads. And that's not surprising, but he's maintaining that support in the rural areas. It's in Cincinnati area, it's neck and neck. In the industrial north, Joe Biden is winning. Whether he's winning by enough to counteract the rural vote, we don't know yet. But it's lining up pretty close to what we have seen in Ohio through the years, is we are
purple.
Toss-up. We're purple.
Yeah.
And yes, Trump won Ohio by 8 points 4 years ago. He still could win it by 5 to 8 points this time. But as of right now, it's definitely a toss-up.
Yeah, I'm surprised at the 22-point lead in the suburbs. I'm not terribly surprised by this next thing. Trump holds a 14-point lead over Biden when it comes to handling the economy. Again, people seem to be giving Trump the benefit of the doubt when it comes to the post-pandemic economy. The Republicans are running on the pre-pandemic job gains and everything else. They want us to ignore what's happened since March.
And frankly, that's not an unreasonable request because it is such an extraordinary event, this pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen this in 100 years. And it just goes to show that had Donald Trump been more like Mike DeWine in how he approached the pandemic, had he said, this is serious, we need to take steps to minimize the spread, we need to wear masks, we need to reasonably shut down the economy to protect lives, and taken it seriously and saw it as a national emergency and not a personal attack on him, he would be winning this election.
He'd be cruising to victory. I think so as well.
Because that economy number is, most elections are determined by the economy. He could say we had the best economy in decades with some degree of validity there because looking at the unemployment rate anyway. Before the pandemic came out of nowhere. We're working through to get through it, and we're going to come back stronger than ever after the pandemic is over. I think he would be up by 10 points right now and not Joe Biden.
Yeah, you're probably right. I do think that Democrats have been somewhat successful in pointing to what they call as a fragile economy that was boosted by Donald Trump. It was obviously not pandemic proof. If you watch this week's vice presidential debate between Kamala Harris and Mike Pence, she leads off the debate calling Trump's handling of the pandemic the biggest bumbling by any American president in our country's history. She cites off the number of people who've died, who've been infected, businesses closed, job losses. Trump still is seen as the economy being his strength, but Democrats are still repeatedly going to go after how his handling of the pandemic affected the economy.
Yeah, and Democrats will argue that if he had handled it better, the economy would be recovering much more quickly. It wouldn't have had the same impact on lower wage workers and other workers as it has. And, you know, we saw today unemployment claims in Ohio are still historically high. It is right there. The coronavirus is topping the economy right now, is the number one issue for voters, and that is hurting President Trump.
And Trump didn't help himself by getting the coronavirus. He essentially guaranteed this would be the main story up to election day.
No, Steve. He says this was a blessing from God.
Well, I guess his idea and my idea of blessings are different. But he's essentially guaranteed it's going to be the main headline until November 3rd.
Here's another. These polls are snapshots, and we don't want to spend too much time on the polls, and it's tied. But here is one other stat that's interesting, too, from the New York Times poll that really gives us a sense of where Ohioans stand. It's the favorability rating. In 2016, Hillary Clinton's favorability rating among Ohioans in the exit polling was 40%. Donald Trump's was 41%. Both candidates this time around do better. Donald Trump's favorability rating is at 46% in the Quinnipiac poll. So he's up by 5 points over the past 4 years. Joe Biden has jumped 8 points over Hillary Clinton. His favorability rating is at 48%, where Hillary's was at 40. There's the difference. Donald Trump is not running against Hillary Clinton this time. Hillary Clinton was just not popular. Her favorability ratings were never terribly high. And Joe Biden, say what you will, he is a more likable candidate than Hillary Clinton was.
Yeah, I think, empirically speaking, looking at the data, that more people have a favorable view of quirky Uncle Joe when he's out on the campaign trail. He's self-deprecating. He talks about being a normal guy from Scranton. I think he is appealing to the voters who abandoned the Democratic Party 4 years ago.
You know, one other stat in this poll that, because we were all surprised, I think, in 2016 by the polling. The polling wasn't terribly off, but it was off by enough in enough states where it changed the outcome. We all, don't forget, polls have a margin of error. And one of the questions that pollsters ask to see if respondents are misleading them or perhaps hiding their support for a controversial candidate or not wanting to say they want to vote for somebody else when they do. It's kind of the Bradley effect, where people will say they're going to vote for the African-American candidate, but they won't. They asked, if the 2020 presidential election were held today, who do you think your spouse or your partner would vote for if the candidates were Biden or Trump? And Trump wins that easily. Trump's at 51% and Biden's at 39%. Does that mean that there's a hidden Trump vote out there that the pollsters didn't capture when they asked it directly? You know, it's like, I have a friend who's going to vote for Donald Trump. That's kind of what that question is getting at.
And it turns out to be you.
We don't know what that means. But that was a number that jumped out, that, you know, that's a 12-point lead that Donald Trump has there.
And for lack of a better term, the ashamed supporters. The embarrassed supporters.
Shy is the word they're using. Shy Trump supporters.
Okay, sure, they're using shy. So I'm not surprised by that, right? I mean, Donald Trump is not pleasant to a lot of people. He's not a nice guy a lot of times. He's brash. He is quick to insult people when he thinks it's politically advantageous. I'm not surprised that, you know, he's not the candidate you want to take home to mom.
No.
He's not a sweet person generally. Maybe he is with his children and his wife, but he's not on the stump. That's not a surprising number.
No,
Joe Biden is likable. He's quirky. I mean, Republicans want to paint him as a socialist, which he's not. But he's a traditional Democratic candidate for president, and Donald Trump is not. So
if you're a Republican
who
supports Republican policies and you want those policies to continue, you might, again, hold your nose. If you don't like him personally, you might hold your nose and vote for Donald Trump this time. But you may not tell a pollster you're going to do it. Mm-hmm. But Trump supporters tend to be very vocal. The ardent ones, they're not shy, but it's the folks in the middle. Again, the folks in the middle.
Welcome back to Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media. Time now for our namesake award, the Snollygoster of the Week, which goes to the shrewdest politician or political move of the week.
Our nominees were Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose for finally agreeing to allow counties to have an extra ballot drop box. But there's a catch. You can only have one more, and they have to be basically in the same location.
Which defeats all intentions of spreading them out geographically.
You can have one at the office and one in the parking lot.
Another nominee this week was the Lincoln Project for its COVID video.
Don't cry for me, White House staffers. The truth is, I will infect you all through my tweeting.
Our audio engineer very thrilled to play that audio.
Of course, making fun of Evita from the balcony. It was a brilliant ad, whether you agree with it or not.
But alas, this week's winner became obvious on Wednesday night.
I've heard that Vice President Biden is fundraising off of the fly.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly how, but I think they have
the fly
couple...
swatter. But that's all right.
Of course, we're talking about the small black fly that landed on Vice President Mike Pence's head during the vice presidential debate and stayed there for better than 2 minutes.
It was a very determined fly.
We couldn't tell if he was stuck,
if he just enjoyed
being there.
Stuck on his hair products.
Oh, with the... It was immediately, it blew up Twitter. Oh, my God, it was just hilarious. It started trending on Twitter.
Yeah, the memes were great. We can't say some of them. Even on a podcast, I don't feel comfortable saying some of them.
Yeah, some of them were very unfair. Several of Mike Pence fly Twitter accounts immediately popped up. It was a field day for the Twitterati. And you know, frankly, it was kind of...
It was funny.
Fun.
It was silly.
I mean, they had MSNBC had a clip of all presidential flies, and they had one that was bugging Hillary Clinton during one of her debates when she was running for president.
Obama looked like a ninja swatting that fly.
I remember he got criticized for killing that fly. Remember that? PETA took him to task for killing that fly.
I do not remember that. I'm glad I don't remember that.
Yeah, he showed his quick reflexes. They had a shot of Donald Trump at a rally trying to swat away a fly. Anyone who's been in a TV studio during a production knows that flies are a real pain. So
anyway, so for shrewdly stealing the show during the vice presidential debate, the still unidentified fly on Mike Pence's head, you are our Snollygoster of the Week.
That's it for this week. Less than 3 weeks until Election Day. Please stay with us. Tell your friends about us. Give us a good review on iTunes. I'm Mike Thompson.
And I'm Steve Brown for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media. This week we leave you with Mike Pence's favorite Miley Cyrus song, Fly on the Wall.